Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. You join me for episode 272, and my name is Robert Crane. So let us start off with some news about Microsoft 365, and the first bit of news is that prices will be going up in about 6 months. So around March 2022, we're going to see an increase in the pricing. I'll put a link to the article where Microsoft spells this out. A couple of interesting points here. Firstly, there doesn't seem to be a price increase for the business standard, and there also is not an increase for E5, but everything else is going to go up from a range of $1, $2, $3 per license. That is only in US dollars. We haven't got local conversions as yet, so I'd advise you to go in and have a look and a read of this article. It does spell out the reasons behind Microsoft's thinking. A lot of this has to do with the fact that the price hasn't gone up for quite a period of time. They've added more features and functionality to the environment, and they obviously want to get in early, I think, with what we're going to see is continuing price rises in all sorts of consumer goods. So it makes sense for them to get in early and do this. And I think it still represents a huge amount of value, no matter what it is, what license you do have. So again, not a huge increase, but it will have an impact. But you do have about 6 months to plan and prepare for that. And as I said, go in and have a look at that article and make sure that you understand what impact it may have for your business. Now, Windows 365 continues to improve and increase in functionality. We've got a couple of articles here which are good reference articles for those who are beginning to spin this up. The first one is around securing your Windows 365 cloud PC. So it dives into the security for Windows 365 business and for the enterprise. Now, there are some concerns that, for example, the Windows 365 business environment does provision machines with the user being an admin of the VM. Now, it obviously needs to do that to connect to Azure AD and do things like that. There is, I've seen, a voting option that people can say, look, you know, we want to be able to control this from the admin console. So I think we will see that down the track. But at this stage, it's a good article to let you know how to go in and configure and secure the environment. Now, just because the environment spins up as an admin doesn't mean that you can't change it or modify it with policies at a later stage. But I think this article is a good place to start if you're looking to understand and secure your Windows 365 PCs better. Now, another one on the Windows 365 front is the article here about getting started with Universal Print. So the idea with Universal Print is that you don't need to be connected to the same infrastructure or LAN to print using your Windows connected or Azure AD connected PCs, and we can now do that also with Windows 365 cloud PCs. So we've got a virtual PC that is something we're using day to day, and we can now print to a printer no matter where it is located, basically across the cloud. So there's some information guidance there for setting all that up and making it work in your environment. Now, the last one on the Windows 365 is the fact that there is now a dedicated W365 community. Again, I'll put the link in the show notes. You can go and subscribe to that. A couple of newsletters and announcements that have come out from them so far. So if you are interested, if you are following along and looking to implement cloud PC Windows 365, then I would suggest that you go and have a look and sign up and follow this community so that you are aware of all the changes, because I'm pretty sure things are going to happen pretty regularly and pretty quickly in this environment. So staying up to speed is going to be very, very important. Now, back into the Microsoft Teams, we've got some real good stuff that's coming to the meeting recording. So you may know that the recordings are moving from Stream into your OneDrive. There's also the ability now to do transcripts. So a lot of the recordings that I've done recently, I've seen the transcript files automatically taking place, allowing me to download and make that, again, searchable. We've got improved playback options. We've also got the ability to auto-start recordings in meetings. So we do have a lot of options in there. I'll put the article again in the show notes. You can go and have a look and read all the enhancements that they have made in this space when it comes to using Teams. Now, another article that, or another area that Microsoft has brought out is what's called the Microsoft Security Technical Content Library. So the aim with this is to bring all of the Microsoft security content under a single URL or a starting point at least, so that you can again go in and get a start on all of that. So it is the entry point to go in and have a look at, you know, all this security content, go in and get more information about all that info, all the good stuff around security, best practices, configurations, and so on. I will put the link in the show notes so that you can go and have a look at that. But if you want to do a search for Microsoft Security Technical Content Library, and that should be your starting point there. Now, the last thing that I will mention before we get into today's interview is this new super duper secure mode for Edge browser. Now, at the moment, that's only supported in the dev channel. It's not in the production channel as yet. It's basically a capability to turn off just-in-time compiler for things like JavaScript, which is apparently where a lot of the vulnerabilities exist when it comes to browser. So you can go and have a look at this. If you are on the dev channel, you can go in and configure this in your environment if you want to get a feel for it. And we expect it to roll out to the production option as well. So go in and have a look at that, play with that, and watch out for it to hit the normal production browser for you. Now, today's interview, we had a few technical issues, just to let you know. So I started the recording and then for some reason Kirsty was not able to hear me, so you won't hear any interaction from me generally. You may hear me trying to talk over her, but for some reason she couldn't hear what I was saying. So I basically just let her go and complete the interview. There's lots of good information that she provided, but very little input from me on this. So what we'll do is we'll get the content out there. I'll put the links that she mentions in the show notes, get them out to you, and then we'll look to do another interview where hopefully we can get that interaction going. So again, just be aware that this interview had a bit of a technical hiccup, and you'll only basically hear Kirsty speaking about the topic. I do try and break in occasionally, but just ignore that because, like I said, we were having technical issues with the environment. So I hope that you still get value out of the interview. I still think there was a lot of really good information in there for you to take advantage of. Now, before we kick off and get into the interview, I'll give you some contact details as usual. You can find me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. Also, send me an email directly via director@ciaops.com. You'll find the podcast at N2K Podcast and also at N2K Podcast on Facebook and on the Twitters. I look forward to you letting us know and to sharing the podcast with anybody out there who may want to receive Microsoft 365, Azure, Microsoft Cloud News. Now, without further ado, let us get into today's interview. Welcome along to our interview for this episode. I'm joined by our returning guest, Kirsty McGrath. Kirsty, welcome along.
Hello, Robert. Hi, everyone. How are we?
I think that probably the best idea is that if we can get you to let everybody know how you are, and then we can probably go from there. So why don't you give our listeners, again, a bit of a background on who you are, what you are currently doing?
Okay, so where am I? Okay, so I'm a cake decorator and I really don't do much else. No, actually, that's not true. Well, it kind of is in the world of pandemic to do, considering what we'll do around sort of adoption and training, which is where I specialize. I have a company, On Point Solutions, and so I'm an adoption consultant. And I spend my days helping, you know, my motto is very much no user left behind. So that's kind of making sure that they go on the journey when it comes to Microsoft technologies. I do focus in the Microsoft 365 space. That's sort of where I am and focusing on adoption and productivity. And so, you know, in terms of that, I also run the adoption user groups for Australia. So we had one that was in person in Sydney and Melbourne, but now we're running them online. So we run that every month on the first Tuesday of the month, which can be found on Meetup. So I tend to do a lot of speaking. I'm also a Microsoft MVP. This is my fourth year, I think it is now, in terms of the award, which has been, you know, wonderful journey and a really great community that everyone can actually draw on around help.
All right, so you better be careful there because some people may hold you to delivering on your cake metaphors cake. There. So I know, think I have experienced those.
That's it. You ever want to find me? I'm on Instagram. It's actually MVP_decorating. So that's what I tend to do at the moment. I'm doing a 6-week online techniques masterclass. So that's why I say I'm doing lots of cakes at the moment. I really am doing lots of caking at the moment.
Well, I think everybody needs a diversionary hobby in this day and age. We all spend Absolutely. A bit too much time behind the screen. Always good to get something, you know, physical, get your hands and not quite the right terminology, but get your hands dirty, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, I certainly do with decorating. I think that it's really important that we have some hobbies at the moment, and I'm lucky that I've got a hobby that I can learn with too all the time. So that kind of leads in, I suppose, to a bit of conversation around the other side of learning.
You've also got a hobby that allows you to lick your fingers, which I think is a bonus. So we'll count that. But I think you're right. I think that what we'd like to talk about and what I brought Kirsty on to give us some insight around, we're all, or most people, I would suggest, are going through some sort of restricted working at the moment. So we're probably working from home or light duties or in the office 1 or 2 days a week. We're restricted largely in what we can do. Luckily, many people in IT can continue on and basically do the work, but it's a different experience because you're probably not with your work friends. You're going to and attending meetings, you know, virtual meetings, which strangely enough seem to be more tiring. However, I think also the other interesting component in all this is that continuing that learning, you know, that career development, that capability so that when things do improve, we can come out of this, you know, ready to run rather than sort of coming back to zero and starting again. So, you know, what have you seen out there with organisations in general, Kirsty? Are they making this, are they understanding that they need to keep moving the ball forward when it comes to understanding, you know, what's available to them with the technology?
Look, you know, I think it was one of those situations where when the pandemic hit, you know, you look back sort of the beginning of last year, 100% of training pretty much completely fell over. This is just not here. This is based on research that was actually global, if not 100%. Died really fast because when you're in a situation under extreme stress, it's very difficult to actually learn during those times. We tend to shut down to learning. However, you know, and not only that, but the technology where you consider I'm focused around sort of Microsoft Teams and you know, being online and virtual, we had to roll those out overnight. So it went from you might take 6 months or even up to a year for you to actually roll some technology out to it's a fortnight to, you know, well, even overnight, literally daily to overnight or within a couple of weeks. So what would happen is those big training programs or learning in that scenario just became absolutely mute because they didn't have time. So there was a sort of a ton of where you might have spent a whole day learning on Teams. Next minute, it's 30 minutes to a 1 hour brief session or just watch this video or you're on your own. This is something you need to do, so therefore just do it. So learning really fell over. All those face-to-face training, for example, just crashed and burned because there was no face-to-face. So it was a lot of scrambling globally by both trainers and organizations to look at, well, you know, can we take this to virtual? And there were some real challenges around that.
I think to say the least.
So we did see some, and I'm sure you saw it too, because I know you do sort of virtual training. So you would have seen that too, Robert.
Well, I think that the interesting thing is, as with everything in this current environment. So we need to adjust, yeah.
In the joys of, you know, pandemic learning, because it's kind of what we're at, there's lots of different things, and I hear all this sort of being bandied around, you know, synchronous to asynchronous, you know, we're doing hybrid to blended learning, what does it look like now, past, future? You know, back in 2013, I think it was around 2013, 12, 13 through to 14, I actually built for Australia's largest training company, and I sit in the technical space. So I was the product manager for all your user solutions, but I was building it to be able to flow through into the more technical and soft skills training as well. I built some virtual online learning. So with building what we class as VILT, Virtual Online Training, VILT, I became a certified online learning facilitator with the Learning and Performance Institute in the UK. And back then there was some kind of core key things and understanding, you know, the here and now and how we're going to do it. And, you know, back then it was, you know, what does the next generation of learning actually look like? Well, kind of we're here. We're in it now, whether we wanted to or not. We have to actually look at other ways of learning to make it of value. There was a McKinsey report that was about, you know, adapting the workplace learning, you know, in the time of coronavirus. And some of those things were around, you know, having a learning response team and protecting the employees, I suppose, with anything that was an in-person program, because there's still a lot of essential workers that are actually, you know, out there that need in-person, whether we like it or not. How we were going to adapt that sort of delivery to be able to, you know, put it into a virtual way. They talk about, you know, promoting digital learning, exploring different strategies and, you know, practicing and preparing sort of those outcomes. Because, you know, when we look at trying to adapt an in-person to a virtual training, there are some really core keys, things that we need to think about. Now, I'll talk about some of the practical stuff and some of the mindsets and what that, you know, kind of looked like. So when we kind of think about how we're going to respond and get out there, have a look at what you would have done in person and, you know, what could you take over to virtual that's going to strategically make sense to be able to do it, and have some metrics around it. And is it feasible? What people are affected if you're doing it online compared to in person, because some things are not great for digital delivery. Some are, and it might require rethink in the way that you do it. For example, you know, they're talking about HoloLens and, you know, building it so you can do those hands-on, you get physical walkthrough by having it, you know, in a graphics sort of way in front of you with having, you know, that whole 3D virtual world. So there's, you know, those kinds of way of learning, but not everyone can afford or do that. So then how do we protect, you know, some of those learning programs? Because you're still going to have some in-person. And then if we are, and I have done them through the pandemic, we have to have some really good proportions in place. We got to have, you know, good social distancing, you know, alternatives to handshaking, cleaning and sanitizing, and, you know, participating if you're going to be doing it remotely. Are they familiar with the environment or those that are coming in terms of cloud-based sharing? But the in-person stuff, you know, was quite interesting, and taking temperatures before we went in. And right even down to the fact that there are times when I'd have to walk up to someone to potentially give them help. But you can't touch them and you can't come near them. And it's not like you can click on their mouse or click on their PC, because then you're touching something. So it's no different than in a virtual world if you're in person now. So, you know, there's some clear things that you've got to think about in terms of protecting people in those sort of hands-on environments. So when we look at sort of those different digital strategies and having some really good essential learning objectives, we've got to kind of focus on selecting content that's going to meet them. If you do like a one-day training in person and you try and take that online, you're looking at a 1-to-2 ratio. So if it was going to take you a day in person, it's going to take you at least a day and a half online, where you could have 12 people in the classroom in front of you that you might be able to walk around. You can really only do 8 people online to be able to help them. So you've got to take that into account. I see a lot of online learning that's not actually created for a virtual environment, which leads to some strategically some really often not great response from those that are trying to learn, because it's a really is a new mindset that needs to be required when we go into this sort of virtual and hybrid learning. And so, but you know, what is the difference even between a hybrid and blended learning or those sorts of things? A lot of people don't kind of realize the difference between the two. You know, when we're actually in something that's a hybrid approach, that means we're using our sort of technology and we've got them online, but we've also got people there physically in the room. So that's a hybrid, which is different to blended learning. So blended learning is where you might also do online, but it also continues on a learning portal, somewhere where you can go and maybe watch videos or put links to information in OneNote, for example, and, you know, they're doing work in their own time. So we've got a hybrid and then we've got blended. So they're two different things. Hybrid, in person and online, blended can be that, but also includes work that happens after the fact. So that comes down, or before the fact, I should say, before and after and during. So that kind of comes into then, you know, what's the differences between the synchronous and asynchronous? So synchronous means that I'm bringing everyone in at the same time. Even they might be in different places, but everyone is there at the same time. The students and instructors are actually there on a specific maybe hour of training or a full day, and the interaction occurs there and then on the course. You can do it, you know, in video conferencing. It can be, you know, online chat rooms. It can be in person. So that's kind of synchronous. And asynchronous in terms of learning is when it kind of occurs at different times and different places. They complete coursework on their own. It's designed for self-study and we're reading and watching and listening, and there's lots of different types of content that you're working with. So we have to take that into account when we bring it into a hybrid world and or blended. So there's a lot of, you know, we kind of have all these terminologies bandied about, and often we don't know, well, what does that mean and what's going to be the best strategy for people to be able to actually learn? And learning is there's a lot of research out there. Look, this has been, learning has been around for a very, very long time. You know, for example, I mean, when we hit the pandemic, the very first thing I did was went into the Facebook groups for Microsoft Teams for Education. Because there was a ton of teachers out there that, although they are teaching and they were in a situation of needing to learn all over again something that was new in terms of technology, they weren't in a position often to even be able to search within that forum to go, how do I do something? We had the same question come up again and again and again. So I would have a Word document with exactly the same information. I could kind of copy and paste, you know, just copy and paste, copy and paste, copy and paste, because they asked the question again and again and again, because they were in a, we need the information here and now. So what is in, like, just in time learning then to, you know, being able to have ongoing learning and something that people can pull from? There's that kind of pull and push around learning. And when we're under stress, like we were through the pandemic, it becomes some real cognitive load going on where we struggle to learn in those scenarios. So learning kind of fell in a heap, and for a long time it fell in a heap. So then when we look at friendly learning and enhanced cognition, and there's some really great, you know, specialists out there around this and doing a lot of study out there. There's Dr. Itiel Dror, Itiel Dror. He's got some really awesome information out there around enhanced cognitive and learning and brain-friendly learning, and you can sort of look at some of the videos and information out there. You know, we have to ultimately have ways to be able to make it friendly when people actually learn. You know, and that means things like really asking lots of questions. We've got to have the opportunities to be able to make errors as we learn. And sometimes giving those hands-on problems gives them those opportunities to make mistakes. But that can be challenging in an online environment to be able to help them to fix mistakes. So at what point is it you get them to share their desktop to show you, which is great in a one-on-one learning environment. But if you've got eight people, sometimes we can't do that with all eight people. The more people you've got, the more challenging it tends to get. So therefore, you might have a moderator or bring in an extra facilitator to be able to run that virtual training with you so they can go off and help if needs be by doing desktop sharing or coming back in. And if things are recorded, then at least they can come back on anything they might have missed if you still have to drive forward. We've got to foster some self-reflection and self-questioning and helping them to think out loud when we ask the questions, and we can do it in comments in a virtual world. So we have to think about it in terms of cognitive learning, and that if you look at it from, say, the Oxford Dictionary, it defines it as, okay, the mental action or process of acquiring knowledge and understanding through thought, experience, and senses. The learning side of it is the acquisition of knowledge and skills through experience, study, or by being taught. So cognitive learning becomes really important, and some of the cues that come from cognitive learning in a virtual environment can be a lot harder. You know, gauging a room through facial expressions, for example, can be a little tougher. So we have to kind of look at that. A great person to sort of have a look at is Richard E. Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R. You know, he has a lot of learning and related to sort of the design of educational material and media that's in this kind of multimedia, and optimal learning occurs when we have visual as well as verbal materials presented simultaneously. So if you put something up on a screen, you're going to have a much better sort of recall, for example, where you've got lots of words, people are going to tune out to what you're going to say. So having visuals, so for example, I saw so much of it. They wanted to run learning, and we've kind of gone backwards in so many ways in learning, which has been what it is. We haven't had a lot of choice, but it has gone backwards. You can do phenomenally effective virtual training online if you break it down into smaller size chunks to allow people to be able to reflect and learn and question and self-reflect and all those things. And the thinking out loud comes from being able to type their questions up in a team, for example, in Microsoft Teams or a forum or whatever it is that you're going to use. And there's lots of different ways. So when I saw, for example, learning being done or teaching being done, of we're just going to run a one-hour webinar, I think of it like, you know, back when, say, for example, Microsoft Office was sort of rolling out technology, and it only happened every 3 years. So you might have done upgrade to Office 2017 or whatever that looked like, for example. So you're going to do the upgrade. That was really easy to run as just a webinar. Here's some really cool new features, because a lot of times people understood the basics. They've been using it for a really long time, so we could run a webinar. However, the challenges that come from doing something like Microsoft Teams, when we start to run a webinar, we saw lots of different confusion, and they weren't putting the core skills into practice to get them over the line to understand the why around what they were going to do. So a webinar is kind of short, sharp, but not a great way to physically learn. And there's a lot of reasons why people would leave a webinar really fast. You know, things like content isn't as advertised, or presenter is boring, or they're just reading slides, or it's literally just words all over excited, way too much text. It goes for too long because people tune out. Literally within 5 minutes, sometimes say 60 seconds, I've tuned out. You know, if you're reading off a script, or you're speaking slowly, or there's no interactivity going on, or sort of, or no purpose to the interactivity, for example. We've got to think about, you know, if you can't even interact with a presenter, you're going to lose your audience really fast. And that happens a lot in webinars and tuning out. So understand, you know, why an attendee would actually leave early. And I'm going to provide a lot of the links to things that I'm talking about to help put things into context if you kind of need to. You know, when I build out this kind of, you know, training and I'm working with others, I have to really think hard around my strategy of what it is that I'm going to do to help people learn. Dr. Sarah Prestridge, she's from Griffith University. You know, she's very much about, you know, stay authentic, allow for those imperfections, but create bite-sized and responsive content. So bite-sized and responsive. If we're going to do it, you know, make sure you're breaking regularly. You know, with online, it's very draining, and even more so for someone that's actually doing the instructive. As an instructor, phenomenally exhausting. It's hard in person. We often don't like to train sort of more than 4 days out of five because it is so draining. You take it to online, really hard to concentrate. And not only that, but I set some guides and things up right from the very beginning. You know, the call of the wild is really strong. They've got their laptop literally in front of them with their mail and all the tech that they could possibly want to do for their work, because it's all there. They've been literally living on it all day, every day. And now you want them to do training instead. So I have to think about the approach of how I can keep people engaged sort of when it comes to learning. So when you want to set that sort of thing up in a virtual environment, as I said, lots of planning and also some follow-up to help people to continue to learn, and that they need to understand it's just the beginning of their learning experience. You know, what they want to put into it is what they're going to get out of it, like anything, whether you're in person or you're not in person. So when I create it and it's in this kind of hybrid environment, so maybe I did have people in the room with me and online. Look, in the past, I used to say it just doesn't work very well, because we start to cater for the person in the room, because it's very easy to see visual cues and hands going up. And if you don't have video on in an online environment, it's very easy to miss some of those cues. So I say try and turn your video on when you're in virtual learning so that you can all feel like you're actually engaged together. It happens too often where we turn all our video off. Maybe you need to because you haven't got great bandwidth, and this is something that you need to have a look at. Have you tested it? Are you comfortable with it? Is the technology ready to go? I recently had a session where it took 45 minutes for us to just get up and running in the technology to run the training for the day, because it hadn't been looked at or tested or rolled out correctly before they even came in. So it was a lot of kind of help desking virtually from me with all, you know, eight people in that session to get them ready to go. Now that makes it really tough when it comes to sort of virtual. So there's some key things, you know, that making sure they got the right web links to get up and running and dial in, whatever that looks like. Try and have that dedicated moderator there if we need to help around discussions. And you'll need to cost accordingly. So someone who's actually organising the training, if you're going to be bringing in, then make sure you've costed someone in, because it can get challenging, for example. Get that material out in advance, especially with online. Make sure they understand what's actually coming. Remind them repetitively before they start of the things that you need them to do and what they need to read, so that they are prepared. It even could be, and sometimes I will do a survey beforehand to make sure that they've actually ticked off the things they need, read, and asking some cool questions so that when they come in, I have a bit of an idea of what they need, for example. I leverage that sort of technology to keep them really engaged. So as I said, I keep my video on, I use gestures, and I make sure that they use the hands up tool, for example, because like I would in the classroom, people just don't get to necessarily butt in automatically. They will throw their hand up, no different than online. You can usually put your hand up online to sort of ask a question, for example. I encourage the use of breakout rooms where necessary, not always utilized in terms of training, very much when I'm doing a facilitation, though, when I'm running workshops. So have a think about, though, where you could put it into learning, because there is lots of ways that you could bring it in terms of your virtual classrooms. I then follow up with, these are all the links to anything that I've talked about, videos for you to learn, get feedback, because it's never just about that session. And for anyone out there that's running virtual training, your first session that you'll run, I would highly recommend that you're using that as a process of improvement. that it's not necessarily for even any training organization that's going to run a session for you virtually. It's not going to be the be all and end all of potentially what it could be like. So do a trial day even, because you need to iron out some of those technical issues and scale them up and identify workarounds, for example, or is there extra information that you need? If you can do a trial session, will work so much better for you when you're running virtual training. So that can be really important. So that's some of the things that I'll do when I go and do my, you know, learning and I'm doing it virtually. And, I've advised, I've taught this. I do a lot of train the trainer. And, you know, at the moment, we can't always, for example, I can't always train a whole organization. There's a lot where I'll be doing train the trainer because I can't physically be on site for a frontline worker in the health industry, for example, at the moment, due to compliance issues. But I can train the people that can physically be there and provide a way for them to connect back with me if need be. That can be just as instantaneous in terms of their learning. So that sort of, you know, way to learn. So then if I have a think about it, what some of the things that I will do are when I go in and do some virtual learning, and a bit of advice is I make sure that I have some cycling slides that I have at the very beginning of a session. So this gives me sort of, and you can set it up with PowerPoint where it just automatically flicks through each page for you, and it gives them the rules of the session, the expectations, the outline, the how-to, things like, this is how you can mute. This is how you can put your hands up. This is how you can chat with me. These are the reasons why you might do any one of those things, for example. What you're going to get out of the session around rules, what I expect of you as a part of this, that we're going to, for example, have it where, you know, I expect respect, tolerance, and understanding is a really big one for online. That often we're trying to get everyone to the same level of understanding. Another one that I'll do is I'll play music so they actually know that their speaker or headset is working, to try and eliminate that whole, is anyone there? I'm not sure my headset's working. I think I'm on mute. Okay. That you're having people on mute. Now, there's some real thoughts around, do we put people on mute when we're in a learning scenario and their hands up only? Do we have them off mute so they can ask a question whenever they like? Do you let them interrupt you? Don't you let them interrupt you? Look, I always say, well, it depends. Depends on what you're teaching. It depends where you are in the day, like all things. When there's a lot of noise, it's sometimes very hard for another learner if you've got all this noise kind of going on. So we need to be very cognizant of those that are neurodiverse as well, because sometimes they need the quiet to be able to concentrate. They get, you know, distracted very easily. So we have to think about that. I have to think about things like colors in my presentation. I also have it where my mouse pointer on a screen, if I'm doing virtual, is big. Like I have a really big cursor that's a different color to make it really easy for people to be able to see and see where I'm putting that cursor as I go. Ways to be able to understand to zoom in, zoom out, for example. You know, it's very easy to kind of zoom in and zoom out if you actually wish to. You just push your Windows key and the plus button on your keyboard, and it will actually allow you to sort of zoom in and zoom out on your screen. So just simple little things to be able to help and support you in that sort of space, okay? So then, you know, what else do I do? Let's have a think. I create a document that if we're going to talk, so say I'm going to do collaboration, for example, and I'm going to collaborate and it's in Teams, I actually have a document that we will physically collaborate in, so they understand collaboration and we get in and we'll do it in real time. But there are other things that I might do, like I set up a document with what we class as swim lanes. So it's something where I have their name and they have beside it, you can use Excel, you can use Word, you can use a whiteboard. I mean, whiteboards are fabulous, and I'll come back to that. But a swim lane document if I've got their name, they know then exactly where to type next to it. So if I ask a question, it could be that we're putting it into chat. That's fine. But there are times where I want them to put it into a document, for example, and I will even have it where I'll ask a question, and it could be even things like, why do you think maybe your organization won't adopt this technology? And I can get them to physically just type it in on the screen because it's a shared document and so everyone can see it, and it helps them with ideas, for example, and it's done in real time instead of when they press enter. So then they know exactly we're going to type against it. Things like moderating your voice, for example. If you're a trainer, understanding your kind of go our little ticks, you know, do you say so, and you know, all those little things that we kind of fillers that we put in, and know those to, otherwise people will get frustrated with those filler words. I also have, and this might seem excessive, and a lot of people will say, wow, that is a lot. Every 3 to 5 minutes, I actually have them interact with me in some way or another. It's a poll, for example. And when you do those polls, you can do them. There's some really great online tools that you can actually use to do polling. Apart from Microsoft Teams, you can have it where you can do more gamification type ones that are online. And those gamifications allows everyone, whether you're in, especially when you're in a really great hybrid environment where they can pull out their laptops and their phones and all interacting at the same time, to have a bit of fun and playing, because if it's not fun, you're going to lose them. So get them to type responses to questions in your chat, or if they want to clarify further. Now, there's so many ways that you can get people to interact. And I say you need to do, and this is based on research, 30 plus relevant interactions in an hour. So if you think about it, every 3 to 5 minutes, you've got them interacting with you. This is how you keep people engaged and on the ball, because they never know when you're going to call on them. So it becomes a little harder to tune out. Now, people will still drop out. They'll still tune out. But the more you can get it interactive, then, you know, the better it'll be. So I really pre-plan those polls and questions throughout the whole course. So I have an outline of exactly what I'm going to go through. So they'll know. They'll also know which ones are going to be hands-on engagements in terms of doing an exercise, and which is going to be more seminar style, where they're going to be in a kind of that learning phase. And then things that are going to be, you know, takeaways, where they've got into other ways of learning that's going to be after the fact. So that way they have a bit of an understanding when an exercise is going to come in, to help them sort of keep them on their toes and engaged. So if you can have a list as well beside you when you're teaching and training, and I will have in there information in regards to the students as they go, where they're having troubles, what they've kind of asked, taking note of technical issues so I can feed it back to the team for the next session that might be run. Sometimes we're only running one, and it might be for the next one. Those, you know, getting in and understanding the facial expressions can make such, a difficult part of, you know, what we're doing. And sometimes you will miss cues, and sometimes the trainer won't necessarily understand what's going on. I like to check in all the time and say, you know, where are you at? I also have a lot of really fun little video snips that I put throughout the place. Things even like, for example, the Penguins of Madagascar, love that one where, you know, the villain is on mute and he goes, they're always doing this. And here he is in the background, a video going, whoa, ha, 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 and talking. And of course, you know, he's on mute. Have a fun. You've got to have some fun with your audience. And, you know, and for those that are being students in this current world, we need to be really conscious that this is a really tough way for trainers to sometimes engage. So we try to do our best. The more that you can interact, the better the session is going to be, whether it's a 1 hour or I'm running 5 days worth of training with you. And often our technical training can be 5 days worth with a lot of content. And I been there where I've used purely online to learn, active engagements, assignments, assigned areas, conversations that can go on, and it can work beautifully. It takes planning. It takes a whole lot of planning. It takes understanding cognitive learning. It takes understanding when you break it into a, you know, blended learning environment so they can have takeaways and what do they need to do next and how do you ask the questions. I don't create a lot of content, things like guides anymore. This technology is just moving way too fast. And there's some great online content, so I try not to repeat things. So, you know, there I do lots of file sharing with them so that they've got things to go away with if needs be. And that file sharing can just be even just links. I do a lot of co-creation on whiteboards to keep them interactive and having some fun. And that can even just be doing smiley faces. Now, how's everyone going? Let's draw all over the board. You know, where are you at? Give me a smiley face. Draw it, for example, because when we're drawing, we're engaging different parts of the brain when we're learning. Okay. So that way, you know, if you're having a bit of fun, you kind of go back into that, you know, mindset of being authentic and no, it's never going to be a perfect world. And that doesn't matter whether you're in person or you're online. It won't ever be perfect, but we can at least plan for it to be the best possible way that we can actually learn. So we need to pressure test as well and have a look at the outcomes and the plans that you have around, you know, the pandemic and COVID so that we can boost some confidence when it comes time to execute. If you're doing it in person and it's going to have to move, what do you do for your audience that might be panicking about a skill? Try and take some of the stress out of those interactions so that they're meaningful and we focus on the human connection in what we do so that we can get things a little bit more seamless when we go down this way of learning. So,
Kirsty,
you know, that gives you a bit of an idea, and I think that I've sort of covered off a lot. This is such a deep space to really talk about, of which, you know, I've done this for a really long time in terms of learning, not as long as some, but, you know, I build my learning around scenarios. I try not to focus so much on a feature of click this, click that. I try to help people understand the battle around why would you click there or do that? How would you put that into your business and where does it become of value to them so you get their aha moments and they've got some really good key takeaways and things that you can do to reinforce it? Because I love it when people have that aha moment. They start chattering away with me in you know, the chat environment. Whether it's before or after, or they start sending me emails. And, you know, I love it because they get into this great brain spike of problem solving. And that's where you want people to be, because if you can solve just one problem at the moment, that to me is a win. So, you know, prepare people as much as try not to forget learning. We want to start thinking about how we can get people up and running, and especially in teams, because I'm seeing them just use chat and Outlook for meetings, yet there's so many other really awesome tools that are actually inside teams to be able to help people to even just learn. So if they can learn how to learn with teams, it make no sense. If they can learn new ways of working, then they can learn better ways of learning. Plug in learning pathways, for example, into Teams. You know, it's a great SharePoint site, and there's a lot of other really great Microsoft tools that they can work with. Have a OneNote with all the different links for your learning. Have in there all the what's new around Microsoft. You can plug in a tab with even the stuff that's coming out from Message Center so they know what's coming. Plug in the blogs to Microsoft 365, for example. Have a whole learning team to be able to support them when it comes to doing blended learning a little later. So that, I think, is it for me. Robert, I've done a ton of talking around, you know, synchronous, asynchronous, hybrid, blending, bit of cognitive thrown in there, how I do it and some recommendations. But happy to have a chat with anyone. You can always connect with me and reach out. And it's at kirsty@onpointsolutions.com.au. And I'm sure that Robert will post everything up for you to be able to connect with me if you wish to.
Right, great. Thanks very much, Kirsty, for all that information. Make sure that you do pass along those links, and we'll put those in the show notes for people. I think it's going to be a very valid resource for people who are either doing training themselves or looking at doing it, because it seems as though we're going to be locked down for a while longer. So it is something to invest the time with, and you will get the benefits out as. And I think leveraging someone with your experience and knowledge is going to save people making a lot of those basic mistakes.
Okay, so, you're good, Robert.
So, again, I'll take this opportunity to thank Kirsty for all her time today, and also everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.